Welcome. This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. Our guest today is Easter Bonnefeld, speaking with us from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Welcome, Easter.
Hello, Will. Thank you very much.
You have a lovely, calm presence, and we would be grateful if you would speak with us about how you acquired this stature and how you maintain it in a world that frazzles many of us.
See, I would have to say it's the conscious effort in working with just being present and working with mindfulness in every situation.
So to begin, your two areas of present employment are a striking contrast to me. Tell us about your work in the hospital.
Okay. So in the hospital, I work in the emergency department, and my role there is to help funnel the ambulance traffic that comes in and to work with the doctors and nurses in what they need, as well as managing the telephone. So I'm right up there in the front.
And so your work's essentially the first level of triage in the emergency room.
Correct. That's correct. Deciding where, what level of care the patients need, which rooms they need to go to, and yeah.
Are you usually there when they open the back door of the ambulance?
Yes, not actually outside, but when they pull up and then they open, you know, they bring the patients right into the area right there. So as the doors open up and the patients have just come out of the ambulance, they come right to the front desk.
And that's you?
And that's me.
Tell us what triage means.
Well, triage is determining the level of care someone needs in terms of their urgency. So sometimes, most often in emergency rooms, people will arrive by ambulance that are either experiencing a heart attack or perhaps they've had a stroke. Other times it could be someone that has slipped and fallen and they might have fractured a hip or. And so when they come in, let's say if they arrive at the same time, then you determine, you know, which room they need to go to and then who needs to be seen first.
I spent 10 years developing and running emergency departments, and I had a lot of energy for that work and then reached the point where it was complete for me. But I just did what was needed, and I can't say I was aware of having a particularly calm presence. In fact, sometimes I think I was a flickering flame in a hurricane.
Yeah, well, it definitely, I would have to say that if you were to come across me in the emergency department, I would be slightly different than if you were coming in to see me as a client for diet and lifestyle or meditation or yoga or what have you. But my practice outside of the ER definitely helped me to focus on maintaining that calm presence.
Mm-hmm. I was trained in what we call equanimity, but I can't say peace was really on my radar, although now I certainly treasure my ability to be at peace.
Yes.
So tell us about your other work.
Well, my other work is working in environments that are there to fully support someone in their, healing process, as well as maybe just maintaining a balanced life. And so the environment that I work in is very quiet. It's important to be, you know, very present. Words and actions that are done are very connected to create a supportive, nurturing environment to allow people to feel comfortable so they can express themselves and we can work together to find a way to help relax them and also provide guidelines for their lifestyle. For a better way of living.
That sounds beautiful. At what point did you become aware that there was a fire in your heart?
I have to say the fire in the heart for me connects with a higher conscious state, being aware of the fire in terms of illuminating and seeking the truth and seeking clarity. For me, in my growing up, in my younger years, I was always drawn to Asian, Far East philosophies, Buddhism, and then also Hinduism and practices where one is present and always trying to be present and, I guess, just a conscious person. And so the fire in my heart brings up images of then connecting to that truth and trying to maintain an awareness of that.
So is that your essence, what some people would call your soul?
I would say it's part of the soul. I don't know. I couldn't say that the fire itself is just fire, is just the soul. I would then have to bring in all the other elements, but I would say that the fire is definitely the awakening aspect of the soul.
This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. I'm speaking with Esther Bonnefeld about her practice of calmness. You mentioned earlier becoming aware of pitta imbalances within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us what pitta is and then what imbalances you recognize and work with.
So we're all made up of elements. And within the Ayurvedic tradition, we're made up of earth, water, fire, air, and space. And so we all have these elements within us. And for some of us, we might have more of an element that's dominant. So for myself, having all five elements, for me, the fire and water elements are the most dominant. And fire and water make up pitta. And again, at a young age, growing up, I think I just was in a natural observant state of myself, of my surroundings. And one thing I would notice within myself, this being very observant, being wanting to learn, being very quick, qualities of pitta are intense. Pittas like to learn. There's a lot of heat involved in the pitta to do with the fire, obviously. So when pitta is balanced, it can be a very it's a good energy to have to get things done. Like I said, to learn. But when pitta is unbalanced, it can turn into becoming sort of trying to be perfectionist about things or carrying judgment or criticism. And so I noticed a narrative in my mind as I would go along my daily life of having this sort of quick-to-judge type of thinking, quick-to-criticize. Even though I may not have verbally acted out, it was still something that I noticed within me. And it was something that I wanted to release because I observed that this ongoing narrative of judgment or criticism just doesn't do anything. It's not productive. So that was
How old were you, Esther, when you had that insight?
Well, I kept journals for a long period of time, and I would say that I started to notice this, I think it was around like 12, 13, 14, something like that, because we had moved around quite a bit when I was younger, and it was that time that we had made another move, and so I had noticed these things coming up, and that's when I first began to notice them more and then gradually begin to work on them.
And you told me before that you'd studied photography and then actually spent some time in Nepal studying Tonka painting.
Correct. For me, going towards the Tonka painting, it was a way for me to connect deeper into finding balance. Actually, drawing the deities that represented the qualities of non-grasping or non-judgment, qualities of releasing anger or finding balance, really helped to connect more with that state. Tonka painting is very time-consuming, and in and of itself, it is a meditation. And so you can paint deities, or you can paint yantras or mandalas, and you have to be very, very present with each stroke that you create and each line and each shading. And so it helps to therefore take you further into a meditative state while still having to be very present with each move that you make.
Easter, for our listeners, some of them may not know what a tonka is.
Okay. So a tonka, you may have seen tonkas before. It's spelled T-H-A-N-G-K-A. And you might find them, you most often will find them hanging in a monastery, a Buddhist monastery. Quite often they'll be framed by fabric. And they are representations of famous realized people in the Buddhist tradition from Tibet or Nepal or India or even Japan. And they have symbols within them. So you might, for instance, have an image of a green Tara. A Tara is a goddess deity that represents for the green one, it represents being able to cut away envy. There's a white Tara that has eyes in her feet and in her hands and a third eye. And it said the white Tara is full of compassion in the eyes.
And is able to cut away envy.
Envy for the white Tara, yes. For the green Tara. She's actually green. And then for the white Tara, she's the goddess energy that helps one to build compassion. And so when you paint these, this is the feeling, this is the concept, this is the reality that you plug into as you paint them. And then once completed, when they're hanging in front of you, when you meditate, this is the topic that you meditate and contemplate on while you're in front of them.
And you spoke about, in this process, the realization of burning away illusion.
Yes. So there's fire and there's lightning, and these symbolize burning away the illusion and wakening up to consciousness. And these symbols also will exist in some of the Tonka paintings through mandalas, which are patterns, geometric patterns or shapes. And so as you then again draw that or paint that, then it's like a rite of passage. In order to get closer to the center of the mandala, you first go through the ring of fire, so to speak. You go through that burning and that shedding away of illusion. In order to get to the center, of self, where it's just pure and balanced.
And then eventually you made the journey from where you were then to connecting with the fire of peace.
Correct. Yeah.
What can you say to us about how you understand the fire of peace?
So from there, I came to Albuquerque to study Ayurveda. And it was through studying Ayurveda that I was introduced to Agnihotra, which is the daily fire ceremony that's created in the morning as the sun rises and as the sun sets. When I was exposed to this, I was immediately drawn to it because the fire, creating the fire itself and the whole ritual involves not only being able to purify oneself. I guess it's like an act of purification in a sense, but it also helps to clear all the energy within your immediate environment. And it is said also to do so for, I think it's like a 2-mile radius around the area where you perform the Agnihotra.
And tell us what Agnihotra means.
So Agni means fire, and Hotra means place where the fire ceremony takes place. So Agnihotra is one that does the fire ceremony.
And what's the fuel you burn?
Oh, yes. The fuel that's used is dried cow dung and ghee. So the dried cow dung is considered to be pure, as the dung that travels, you know, that's created by the cow eating just grass and going through a whole process of cleansing before it exits the body. And the ghee also coming from the cow being reduced down. These two are considered a pure form of fuel.
You've said to me that burning ghee is a sattvic fire.
Yes.
Tell us what sattvic means.
There are three qualities that are known as rajas, tamas, and sattva. And these three qualities exist within us and within, you could say, the mental realm. So rajas is the activity that it's active, things are always moving. It's the energy of creation. It's the energy of doing. Tamas is the state in which we find ourselves slowing down. It's energy is heavy and its energy is internal, and it's a necessary energy to balance the rajas. Sattva is the energy that is the balance between the two. It is neither too fast nor too slow. It is a pure energy because it's considered that. It's considered balanced and pure. Sattvic, something that is sattvic is considered like equanimity.
So if it's a wild time in the emergency room, and you,
that would be rajas.
And you can be an island of sattvic calm. That's maybe has benefit to the patient and the doctors and the nurses.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I do have to say that I'm not 100% successful all the time. but I have heard it say that. But I have had comments that they appreciate my energy, which is something that people don't really speak about in the emergency room, but that it does help to help others. And I also just have to interject that I'm always in awe of also what the doctors and the nurses do within the ER, the way that they hold themselves and interact with the patients and also with each other is very admirable. So, yeah, I have to definitely say that.
So how long have you been working with your inner and outer fire?
Probably like 5 billion years.
Five billion, you said?
Yes, yes. Well, I don't know if I've been reincarnated that long. But probably for about 5 years, I've been working with the fire practice specifically for 5 years.
And what's your experience been?
My experience has been that if without knowing that I might have get caught up again in sort of a circle of thought or a circle of a way of being that, you know, kind of away from being able to maintain peace, it helps me bring myself right back to my center. It allows, once again, to shine the light where I might have become too internal. And I immediately notice it on the surroundings in the places that I live in. I actually really honestly do notice more birds coming around. I'll notice a little bit more variety of birds.
So what does peace mean to you, Easter?
Peace means to me space and clarity. We had talked a little bit about that. And all things being in balance, where there's neither a sense of grasping for things nor pushing away, where one is just content with their surroundings. When people are able to interact with each other without judgment or criticism, where we are able to honor the earth and everything that she brings to us, and, you know, support by our actions giving back to the earth.
So we've got one more minute.
Okay.
Can you tell us a story about holding calm and peace during a time of chaos?
I can't think of like a specific story, but what I can say is, well, in the ER, it's really a matter of always being aware of what's going on around, because within, it's sort of like a U shape. So within each room, there could be something that's happening with a patient. There could be something that's happening within the halls where people have to rush towards to help someone. And with myself being in the middle, I have to be able to remain where I am, pick up on what's happening, and then take action to help whatever going on. So that might be making a phone call. That might mean paging overhead to get additional help.
Anything else you would want to say about the fire of peace in yourself?
I would say that the fire of peace within myself is an ongoing practice, and it's one in which is available to everyone. And I think it's something that everyone continues actually to do with themselves every day without knowing it. And that the more we are all able to turn our attention to that, then the more we would be able to turn our attention outward and work towards creating lasting peace throughout the land, which would be awesome, especially with everything that is going on today and has in the past, and, you know, will probably continue to do so.
Yes, it would be a blessing to grow some external peace.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Easter.
Thank you very much, Will.
This is William Evans, and you've been listening to Shifting Gears and a conversation with Easter Bonnefeld about tending her inner and outer fires. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.